10 to 30 miles per hour. Tonight then, sunset 7:47, partly cloudy and mild, a low of 46. Tuesday we can dry out, sunny and warm. The high tomorrow is 71. So the numbers right now, it's kind of breezy. Wind from the southwest at 15, some gusts up to 22. 65 degrees Kenosha, 60 in Racine, 63 this morning to the west for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. This election year will be very good for Wisconsin economically.
And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and we have two newly recorded interviews for you today. Here is part one. And in this portion of WGTD's Morning Show, we're going to be talking about something that nobody wants to experience, a fall, especially a fall that causes serious injury. Unfortunately, the state of Wisconsin claims a very dubious distinction. We are the worst state in the country when it comes to falls that cause serious injury, as in a fractured hip or serious head trauma. We fall a lot in the state of Wisconsin, and there is a program underway that seeks to try and prevent at least some of these falls from occurring. And so we're going to be talking about that for the next few minutes with two people who come to us from the Kenosha County Aging and Disability Resource Center. Paula Clark has joined us before. She is Marketing and Program Supervisor for the ADRC. And with her as well is Haley Couch, who is in charge of their health and wellness programs and specifically wearing the hat today of Fall Prevention Coordinator. So we will be talking about what causes falls of this nature, and what each of us can do on our own behalf and on behalf of those we care about in terms of trying to prevent serious falls. Paula Clark, Haley Couch, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you for having us.
Good to have you here. Paula, before we get into this particular conversation and this particular topic, I think it would be really good for you to take a moment to talk about the ADRC in general, the kind of things that you provide, the sort of services that you make available, the difference that you make in a lot of people's lives.
Sure. The ADRC has been around for a good 20 years now. There's an ADRC in every county of Wisconsin, and our services are free. We support adults 18 and over and older adults 60 and over and their caregivers. So pretty much everybody. Anything as simple as just needing some basic resources to more complex issues such as insurance benefit issues that may not being may be denied, and you're looking at your insurance and you're saying, why is this being denied? This shouldn't be. You can contact us with Medicare-related questions or disability-related insurance questions, and we'll take a look at those policies. And if you are correct and they should be paid for, we're going to go to bat for you and help you figure that out. We have a very robust information team, our IANA, as we like to call it, Information Access and Assistance. And they are on the phones 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, answering questions, providing resources, any kind of questions at all. I always like to tell folks, you don't really even have to know what your question is. You just need to know that you're looking for some assistance. You may be a little confused as far as where to turn next. If you're helping your mom or your grandma or your neighbor with things, you can just give us a call. And we know what questions to ask you to figure out what resources might be available for you. We have a dementia care specialist in our office that helps with education. She provides educational classes, support groups, as well as just doing one-on-one with somebody who might just newly be diagnosed with some form of dementia. And we know that there's a lot of different types of dementia. Alzheimer's we hear a lot about, but there's other things as well, like Lewy body dementia, frontal lobal. So just providing education and making sure people are really getting the services they need. And we also have our Adult Protective Services unit housed within our office. They're not necessarily a part of the ADRC, but we really work closely with them. And they provide information and resources and supports for folks who may be experiencing some type of financial exploitation, or abuse of any kind. Maybe you're worried about a neighbor or a friend or even a relative who you think may be being exploited or abused, or even some self-neglect. Sometimes as we get older, we hesitate to reach out. And what services can we help you with? Our goal overall is to help folks stay in their homes as long as possible and as safely as possible.
Where are you headquartered?
We are at 8600 Sheridan Road in Kenosha.
Very good. And there's a whole lot of things that you make available to citizens of Kenosha County and free of charge. And we should probably underscore that we're not just talking about the city of Kenosha, but the far reaches of Kenosha County as well. I suppose that's in and of itself maybe a bit of a challenge in terms of providing services and resources to that large an area.
Absolutely. Trying to connect with the western portion specifically is really important. We actually do have a table out in the Bristol County Building for folks if they're looking for information. We keep it well stocked with our brochures and things. I try to make it out there at least once a month. It's a great place to start with resources if you're just kind of wondering what it is that we do. Transportation is another issue. Nutrition, things like that, we provide information for as well. So yeah.
Very good. And I know you have a website. I have visited it, but I don't recall what its address is.
Oh, goodness. He's testing me here. ADRC at Kenosha. No, that's our email. I'm sorry. ADRCKenoshaCounty.org.
Very good. So we, of course, are talking about a specific topic today, very much related to the good work of ADRC, and namely falls. Falling and the damage that one can do to oneself when you take a serious fall, and maybe some steps that a person can take in order to prevent that. Before we bring in Haley into the conversation, Paula, can you just say a word about having a fall prevention coordinator? Is that something that we also would find at nearly any ADRC around the state of Wisconsin, or is this maybe something a little bit special right here in Kenosha County?
Oh, that's a great question, and I'm not 100% sure of the answer. Most of the ADRCs are mapped out pretty much the same, but we do have special areas, and Haley's probably going to be able to answer that a little bit more closely. I know that we all have health and wellness coordinators. I don't know if all of the ADRCs focus on the falls prevention as closely as we do. We have and they don't, as she's shaking her head. We also have offer caregiver support, which coincides with what Haley does. Our caregiver support specialist works hand in hand with Haley. And then, of course, our loan closet, which is unique to our ADRC as well.
Very good. Well, lots to talk about, Haley. It's great to pull you in now to the conversation. So, first of all, how long have you been the fall coordinator for ADRC?
I started in August of 2022, so I'm going on my second year.
Very good.
Close to my second year.
Right. And this is just a part of all of the things that you do there, correct?
Correct.
Right. But that's what we're going to kind of focus on today. So we're going to start with what's a fairly basic question. It might even seem like the kind of thing that goes without saying, and yet it's probably really important if we want to talk about preventing falls to understand how and why and under what circumstances falling typically occurs. So let's talk about that first.
Sure. So falls can happen from anything from improper footwear to medications. Some medications might cause you to become dizzy, or some medications might kind of collide with each other. So if somebody is experiencing a fall, or if they are experiencing issues when it comes to falling often, making sure that they're talking to their healthcare provider or even their pharmacist if they think that it is a medication issue. It could be anything, honestly. It could be pets. Pets are a big one. And I'm not saying to get rid of your pets, but being more aware of your pets are a big one, especially their toys. I mean, my cat likes to leave his toys everywhere. So it is very important to kind of be more hyper aware of things that are on the ground as well, including slips when it comes to water on the floor or hazards that you might not see.
Right. And I think you're right. That's a lot of things that we tend to take for granted, especially if they're just kind of always there, always underfoot, either the pets or their toys or other things. And at some point, that starts to become a significant risk. I mean, nobody wants to fall. Nobody wants to injure themselves at any age. But of course, when we get older, such falls are apt to be more serious or, in a sense, cause more damage to us. So how common is it? I mean, we mentioned the statistic about how there are a lot of falls here in the state of Wisconsin, particularly among older adults. Just how common is this? I suppose that's not a real easy thing to estimate.
It is 1 in 4 older adults. So anyone that is considered 60 and older, it's 1 in 4, and 67% of those will experience 2 or more a year. So it's a lot.
And I think the statistic you're quoting, we're really not talking about just minor little stumbles. I mean, it sounds like we're talking about really significant falls.
Correct. Yes.
And I think one of the things that maybe is important for us to recount is, in a sense, the steep decline that can occur in an older adult's life if and when they fall and experience the kind of injuries that we're talking about. Not to put it in too gloomy of terms, but sometimes it can kind of sort of mean the beginning of the end when somebody takes a fall of this nature. And I suspect in the work that you do, you see that probably far too often.
I do. And when I do talk to those that have fallen, they do tell me all the time that it is embarrassing, and it's something they don't want to ever experience again. So I always try my best to assist them as much as possible. Even if it's something minor from the loan closet, I can definitely try my best to help them out.
Right. You know, it's interesting. We sometimes also forget about until we get to the age where this becomes our own reality. But it kind of goes back to those familiar commercials where people have fallen and they can't get up. That's also what we're talking about when people take a serious fall, that sometimes not only are we talking about whatever injury might or might not happen in the fall itself, but we're also talking about someone who might end up being, in a sense, stranded or marooned. I mean, on the ground, unable to get up, unable to summon help. They might be there for days. And I suppose once in a while you are encountering even unhappy situations like that.
I am. There is a situation for a lady that I had assisted in Bristol, and they landed outside and they were out there for a long time, ended up having a lot of sunburn. And so it is a lot more common than people think when they are laying on the ground a lot more.
Paula, I'm sure in all the clients you work with, this is probably kind of a familiar refrain, I'm guessing.
It is. It, unfortunately, it is. And we've been working on this for many, many years, the falls prevention, and thankful for our falls coordinator, the calls that come in, and then the aftermath, seeing folks ending up in nursing homes with the broken hips and brain injury is really one of the most important things to address. Even if you fall and you feel like you're okay, it's so important to go to the hospital and have everything checked out. I know of someone who was very involved with our falls prevention. She was a nurse, and her mom fell. She seemed like she was fine, and 3 days later, she passed away from the fall. Mm. So there wasn't anything really obvious going on, but that's why it's so critical to not only make sure that you follow up if you have had a fall, but also what you can do to prevent it.
We're talking today on this portion of the morning show with two representatives of the Kenosha County Aging and Disability Resource Center, Paula Clark and Haley Couch. And Haley happens to be the fall prevention coordinator. So the ADRC has resources that are aligned along this cause of fall prevention. So tell us about some of the community resources that are available.
Sure. So I go into homes if somebody is wanting it and do a home safety evaluation. So I can go into any room that they are wanting more assistance in, and I can kind of give them some tips and tricks. I can recommend some things for safety. So when it comes to maybe grab bars in the bathroom or having a shower chair, removing throw rugs if they do have any. Throw rugs are a very big trip hazard. So I do give some tips on that. They don't have to listen to me, but some people do. But that is one of the main things. And then if they do want to take any of the classes that we do offer at the ADRC, specifically the Stepping On program, which is a fall prevention program, I do also give them information on that one as well.
Very good. Yeah, I want to explore that. I have seen the name, but I otherwise don't know anything about that. So tell us more about this Stepping On program.
Yeah. So it's a evidence-based program. It's been in the works for many, many years. It is 7 weeks, 2 hours once a week for 7 weeks. And we have a physical therapist that comes and talks about balance and strength exercises, how to get up from a fall if you do end up falling, then also how to walk up and down stairs if you have a mobility device. We also have a pharmacist that talks about medication safety and then what medicines might make you drowsy and end up causing you off balance. We talk about home hazards, community safety, and then also vision as well. So some vision, we have a vision expert from Milwaukee that comes down and talks about light bulbs that might make it easier for you to see, or night lights, anything that with helping your vision.
Hmm. You know, that never occurred to me that vision or lack thereof, I mean, if somebody's own sense of sight is compromised, or if we're talking about a space in which the lighting is maybe inadequate, that could be a huge contributor to somebody falling.
Yeah, especially if you're walking around at nighttime and you think that you see a shadow, but it's not a shadow. So nightlights are a huge one. Even motion-activated lights are a big help. I've seen people that have pets and they do the motion-activated lights, and it's helpful so they don't trip over their pets.
We just installed a motion detection light in our home as the room that we enter from the garage. And I can't tell you what a difference it's made. So that was a very smart idea that my wife had. And they can make a huge difference. And I was surprised how inexpensive it was, too. So it's not too big a deal. The other thing I think we probably should say about this Stepping On program, is that, you can Google not falling or fall prevention or something and maybe get a big long list. But what you're talking about is somebody actually being in the room with you and working with you, particularly this piece involving the physical therapist who can really actually help you walk across the room, watch how you're walking, and give you ideas. I mean, it sounds like that's what this is designed to do.
Absolutely. And it's we have a class coming up, and we do like to say that I think according to the study and also how the program was created, that it has reduced falling by 37%.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's not 100%, but I mean, it's something and it's helpful. It's definitely beneficial. I've heard rave reviews from this class.
Right. And I suppose it's important to help people understand, especially once they reach a certain age, that, I mean, it might be hard for them to grasp the notion that they need help with how to walk. And yet, when people get to a certain age, the way they walk starts to become, I guess the fancy word is, encumbered. And so this is a class that really helps us with this most basic activity of walking and helps people understand how they can continue to walk as safely as possible.
Absolutely. Especially the balance and strength exercises, because strength is a big thing when you start to get older, that you definitely need some more assistance when it comes to strength. And you don't have to lift 150-pound weights every single time. You can just do the little things.
Right. But yeah, every little bit helps. So I could see how this could really be a great thing for an older person to access. When we're talking about serious falls, typically, where do they happen? Are they in particular rooms of the house?
They happen everywhere, but most of them occur in the bedroom or in the living room, where you're spending the most time.
Okay. And so when it comes to looking at your living space and figuring out what hazards are there, I suppose those are the spaces that that you need to be most diligent about. And although I think you touched on them, maybe you could reiterate some of the things that people can look for that you might not think of as hazards and yet operate as hazards if we're careless.
Yeah. Throw rugs are a big one. Having clutter on the floor, so little trinkets or little knickknacks, papers, newspapers. In the bedroom, if you have like a little blanket that goes over your bed and it goes over too far and you don't tuck it in, that's another big one. Also wearing socks when it comes to carpet. If possible, wearing a sturdy slipper or sturdy shoes. That way you are more grounded into the ground. I know barefoot is probably the way to go, but having that stability with shoes as well.
Right. So if people want to, first of all, sign up for this class and or to have you come into their place of residence to give an assessment, what do they need to do?
Call the ADRC. Our main line, our receptionist, will be able to direct them in the right direction.
Right. And I assume that you get calls all the time of this nature.
We don't get a lot of calls. She connects with, right?
So I work with the fire departments in the entire county, and they send me fall reports on the daily, or they send me people that are in need of assistance. So I work with those fall reports, but we do have some people that do call because they either heard about the class and they want to hear more about what is offered, or they just heard about it from a friend. I've had a lot of those.
That's great. That's great. And Paula, I'm sure you want to reiterate the wonderful news that anything in terms of resources from the ADRC are free.
Yes, our resources are free. We accept donations on some of our classes, but it's not expected. It's just an offering. If somebody feels obligated or are more like they'd want to kind of support what we do. But yes, our services are free. That's one of the things I love. We're county funded and making sure that folks get the things that they need to live their best lives actually saves money in the long run.
Sure. And if they can live their best lives safely at home, so much the better.
Absolutely.
Well, I can really see how your fall prevention program can be a tremendous help. And I think most of us know somebody, an older adult in our lives, who has taken a serious fall and seen so much of their well-being compromised. And so anything we can do to prevent that or at least reduce the risk of that is certainly important and laudable work. So Bravo to both of you and to all of your colleagues. Paula Clark is with the ADRC, the Marketing Program Supervisor, and Haley Couch, the Fall Prevention Coordinator, and also in charge of their health and wellness programs. Thank you so much for being on the morning show today to offer up this important information. It's been great to talk with you.
Thanks so much, Greg.
And the phone number at the Kenosha County Aging and Disability Resource Center is area code 262-605-6646. You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. It is a beautiful day in southeastern Wisconsin and Earth Day as I am recording this interview with Dr. Tracy Holloway, who is a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and also part of a group called Science Moms. This is a group of scientists and moms who are tremendously concerned about climate change, and in particular, the way in which climate change in the here and now, to say nothing of in the future, is causing harm to our planet, and in particular, imperiling our children. And so they are, in a sense, trying to join their voices to, of course, a rising chorus of concern about issues related to our planet's environment, and calling on all of us to do our own part in terms of combating the effects of climate change. As I said, Dr. Tracy Holloway is a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, also as team lead for the NASA Health and Air Quality Applied Sciences team. She has worked a great deal on this issue of climate and climate change, and I'm excited that we can talk with her about this nonpartisan group known as Science Moms. Dr. Tracy Holloway, we welcome you to The Morning Show.
Thank you so much, Greg. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Tell us, if you would, first of all, how you first became interested in this particular aspect of science. I mean, this area of science to which you have applied yourself primarily in terms of your time and energy.
Sure. Well, when I was in college, I was majoring in applied mathematics. And, you know, I liked the classes. I think math is fun. Maybe not everybody does, but I always liked it. But there was this question of like, okay, well, what's a big problem that would be benefiting from my time and career and my life, like a lot of young people are thinking? And I thought it was really interesting to see how math could be used in studying the atmosphere, from tracking hurricanes to predicting the weather. So I went to graduate school in atmospheric and oceanic science at Princeton University, and I moved forward with research using computer models to understand the atmosphere and the planet. And so I've been doing that ever since, and I started here as a professor at the University of Wisconsin 21 years ago.
And at least for a time, your appointment at Madison, that is your specific faculty position, bore the distinguished name of Gaylord Nelson. Just remind our listeners about Gaylord Nelson and the way in which he was such a tireless champion of issues like the one we're talking about today.
Yes, well, Gaylord Nelson was the founder of Earth Day during his time in the Senate. Back in 1970, we had the first Earth Day. And it's exciting that that came from Wisconsin. One of our own elected leaders made it happen, and now it's celebrated around the world. And at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, our Environmental Studies Institute is called the Nelson Institute in his honor.
Very good. So let's talk about this nonpartisan group of which you are a part called Science Moms. And maybe we should add right here that you are the mother of two sons. And I am very anxious to hear more about this group, when it was created, and for what purpose.
Yes. So, you know, my ever since I was a student, I've been studying scientist and became a scientist, and that's my job. And then 14 years ago, I had my first kid and I became a mom. And for me, those were always two very separate hats that I wore, you know, one during the day and the other one at home taking care of my family. And so to me, it was both surprising and exciting when I was invited to join this new initiative in, around 2020, when they were launching this group to bring science and information and facts to a group of the population who's very concerned about the future, basically moms. We're making decisions all the time about what we can do today to make our kids' lives successful for decades to come. And so the Science Moms program was looking to find scientists and moms who believed in this mission of trying to make this important issue more accessible and engaging to the moms of America.
So I wanted to make sure to get some clarification about something. The description that I am reading says Science Moms is a nonpartisan group of climate scientists and mothers. Should that actually read a group of climate scientists who are mothers? I mean, in other words, does everybody who is kind of officially part of this group both a scientist and a mother?
Yes. If you go to the website Science Moms Who We Are, the group of us who are all featured there are all climate scientists and mothers. But I know that anyone can sign up for the mailing list and follow and be part of the broader movement, whether they're and do not are not required to be a climate scientist. But in terms of sort of the face of the organization and those of us who are conducting outreach like this, we're all both climate scientists and moms.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Dr. Tracy Holloway, who is a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and part of this group called Science Moms, a nonpartisan group of climate scientists who are mothers, who are trying to help the general public, but in particular their fellow mothers, understand the nature of climate change, the peril that it presents to us, both in the here and now and in years to come, and is also seeking to give tools by which we can all try to make some kind of difference in this really crucial issue. Professor Holloway, one of the things that is said in the description of the group Science Moms is that you seek to demystify climate change. I wonder if you could help us understand kind of the nature of climate change and why it requires demystification. What is it about climate change that makes it maybe difficult for a lot of people in the general public, and I would include myself among them, to really fully grasp its what it's all about and its significance?
Sure. So, you know, I think one thing about climate change that makes it unusual from other areas of science is that people fight about it all the time. And so I think anytime where you have so many people fighting, there's a lot of facts that are being thrown around and you don't know what to believe and what's true. But the basics of climate change is that there are gases in our atmosphere, and some of those gases warm the planet. And actually, our planet would not be habitable if we didn't have some of these warming gases protecting the Earth. So these aren't bad gases. They just are like a blanket. They keep us warm. And but these gases in the atmosphere have been rising ever since the Industrial Revolution, because when we're burning fuel, and that turns into a gas, and it just stays in the atmosphere for 100 years or more. So we see these levels going up and up. And so this blanket that's keeping the Earth warm and has been all along is now just becoming a thicker and warmer blanket. And that is has consequences, like it changes weather patterns and leads to more extreme weather. It can lead to warmer and longer summers. It can lead to warmer winters. So the impacts of climate change are nuanced and come in a lot of different forms, But the basic idea that we're burning fuels and they're making this warming blanket of gases thicker, that's something that's really well established and not controversial.
So if there is fighting about climate change, and you're absolutely right that there is, if the essence of climate change is, at least in your mind, beyond dispute, then what is all the fighting about?
I think that there are different layers to the fighting. One layer, which is totally reasonable, is what should we do about it? And there's a lot of solutions that are available. There are different technologies. There are different policies. There are different ways of organizing the tax code. I mean, and the truth is the Science Moms program is not advocating for one particular policy solution. There's so many policy solutions. There's this, anytime though something is political, related to policy, related to change, it is going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be something that gets looped into all the messy politics of our age. And, and I think then this idea that these invisible gases can be warming the planet is not something we intuitively experience. Like, you know, when you're having a barbecue and smoke comes off and you cough, okay, I understand maybe there's pollution that affects our health. That's something we can experience. But most of us don't experience these warming gases because they've been there our whole lives and the planet depends on them. So there's a little bit of disconnect between how we experience the world and then scientists telling us that it's changing. But if you look at the facts, you can see that lines are going up for carbon dioxide, for temperature, things are changing. So I think that as people are living, I mean, I'm 50 years old, and I know that when I was a kid, we had a lot more snow here in the Midwest, and things were a lot colder in the winter. And that is totally consistent with what the data show.
Hmm. I know from talking to one person in my life, I don't want to identify them any more specifically than that, but somebody I'm relatively close to who is what I would call a climate change skeptic. I mean, not skeptical to the sense of thinking it's just complete hogwash, but skeptical in maybe kind of the best sense of the word. This person's sort of central contention is we just can't possibly know enough about the long history of our planet to know whether or not what's happening right now is just one of those sort of blips, or is it part of something relentless and that will not ever change unless we intervene in some really substantial way. The part of their skepticism that intrigues me is that idea of the history of our planet. And how is it possible for us to know where we've been in terms of our climate? I mean, how is it that we can know what our world's climate was like, for instance, 100,000 years ago or 1 million years ago or 3 million years ago? I mean, I know that's a very complicated question, but maybe you can just sort of summarize how it is that we can ascertain that kind of information, which in turn, of course, can help us understand this present moment in which we find ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. And, you know, over the evolution of the planet, the continents have moved and there were dinosaurs and palm trees were growing in Antarctica. Of course, our planet has gone through a huge number of changes. I think, though, when we're thinking about how do we know, one of the main ways we know is that there's kind of clues that are hidden in the ice cores in Antarctica and in the Arctic, in trees, in bogs. And the one that I'm most familiar with that I think is sort of the most robust is that they can take ice going deep, 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 deep into the ice pack of Antarctica and go back hundreds of thousands of years, at least 400,000, but they're always going deeper. And this idea that then you can see is basically every year new ice is deposited and then it gets built on and built on and built on. And tiny little bubbles of air that are in the composition of the ice going back all those many years can help us see what the temperature was and what carbon dioxide levels were over time. And in those records, we can see the ice ages. We understand what caused the ice ages. There was just a little bit of difference of how much sunlight was hitting the Earth. And we see how some amplification cycles led to these big ice ages, even from relatively small changes in incoming sunlight. Those also help us see that over the past 150 years or so, things have been very different. And we can see that carbon dioxide is going way up, and temperatures are also going up. So we can see what's happened. We have a good understanding of what caused it. And now we see what's happening, and we have a good understanding of what's causing it, too.
We're speaking with Dr. Tracy Holloway from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She is part of a group of scientists who are also mothers. They are called Science Moms, and they are raising a new alarm about climate change with this particular focus on how climate change affects our children. It's a really intriguing notion, I think. I mean, all of us, of course, walk around on the surface of the planet, and all of us, of course, are affected by climate change. But I think, Science Moms, you want to make sure that we are thinking about this, that is, we as adults are thinking about this not in terms of our own lives and the way our lives are impacted, but the lives of our children. Tell us more about why you think that is an effective strategy, shall we say, in terms of awakening more awareness about climate change.
Sure. Well, you know, I mean, as a mom, I have two boys. One is 4 years old and one is 14 years old, kind of a big spread. And, you know, I think all the time about what will help them succeed and thrive in their life. I mean, from, what I feed them for dinner to their appointments at the dentist. I mean, whether to get braces, all of these are decisions that we're making as parents that affect the well-being of our kids for decades to come. And I think it changes the way that I think about the future, because I'm not thinking about what my personal condition is going to be, but what is the life that I'm setting up for my kids? And, you know, in my role as a scientist, we're often looking at data from the past, like we've been just talking about, but also from the future. And, you know, when I first got started in this field around in the late 1990s, we would talk about the 2020s, and that seemed far away, and the 2050s seems far away, and the 2100s, and it was this change that was happening in the future. But we're already in the 2020s, and when 2050 comes along, my youngest son is going to be 30 years old. It makes the future seem much closer, and it makes us feel like, at least to me, the changes that we can implement today really are going to have a meaningful and high-value impact on people that we love.
Hmm. Of course, one of the things that makes some people shy away from this issue is the immensity of the issue, the dimensions of it, and the fact that some of the things that most aggravate and exacerbate climate change are matters that are not in our direct control. And yet, Science Moms exists in part to galvanize the mothers of the world and the rest of us who are not mothers, but also concerned about this, to do something about this. What would be some of the most important things and significant things that that ordinary citizens can do to try and make a difference when it comes to this issue?
Well, really, you know, just talking about it today and engaging with your friends and talking with the people who are our leaders, whether it's the school board or through voting or whatever. I mean, this just having these conversations is the most important thing that an individual can do to combat climate change, because the forces that are affecting what our energy system looks like are outside of the control of most individuals. but our collective voice makes a huge, huge difference. And, you know, I'm an optimist. And so when I think about what the future might look like, I think of a few success stories that we've had in the past. Like, a lot of people have heard about the ozone hole over Antarctica. That was discovered in 1985. And 2 years later, boom, there was a solution put in place, the Montreal Protocol, and we turned the corner on the problem. And with air pollution that makes us, that shortens human lifetime or worsens asthma for kids, this is something that there was a rule put in place in 1970, and everything has been getting, the air has been getting cleaner and healthier since 1970 here in the United States. So I would like to think that our kids would look back on the 2020s and say, oh, that's when they turned the corner on climate change. That's when things started getting better on climate change. It doesn't have to be an overnight solution. It just has to be the start of a solution.
Hmm. You said something just now that raises one complicating factor, and that is the fact that the planet Earth is a lot more than just the United States of America. And of course, it's enough of a challenge just for us as a nation to get our act together and come together on this, although, you know, certainly that might be possible. We're also talking about a whole planet that is also contributing to this situation, albeit maybe in different ways or in different degrees of severity. How would you have us think about this in terms of a truly planet-wide scale?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that, you know, one thing I'm always kind of surprised about and when I travel to other countries is that American movies are everywhere and American music is everywhere and American companies are everywhere. And, you know, actually what we do here in America really has an impact on other countries, even aside from the politics, even aside from, you know, anything formal. You know, we're building this American dream, and it's a wonderful place to live. And many countries are, in different ways, inspired or seeing what's going on in the United States. And so I think that we're a leader in so many areas, in technology and education and culture, in a lot of different ways that we are a leader and having a global impact. And so, you know, to me, if we can be moving our own energy system and society toward a thriving, positive, low-carbon society, then to me, I think that that will have ripple effects around the world. I don't think we have to wait for another country to do something just for us to do it. In the same way, you know, there's not much else in our lives where we're sitting around waiting for another country to take action before we take action at home.
Hmm. By the way, what do you take away from the students with which you are working at the University of Wisconsin-Madison? I suspect if they are anything like the students that I work with in my job as a music professor, they give you great energy and great hope for the future.
Absolutely. I love working with students. I think it's the best part of our job. And, you know, they're very concerned about the future, very concerned about climate. But I think it also helps them feel more calm and secure in their own lives to know that the grown-ups that they're working with are taking these issues seriously and we're doing what we can do. You know, sometimes I meet parents or grown-ups who of any profession and background who say, oh, yeah, well, our kids are going to have to solve the climate change issue, or, like, there's a lot for our kids to solve. And I think to myself, why are we leaving this for our kids to solve or our students to solve? Like, we're the grown-ups in the room. Like, let's do what we can. And then, of course, it's not going to be a snap overnight solution, but we can be turning the corner and getting us on a path for the students to keep us going, for our kids to keep us going. And, you know, I think that's what every generation has been doing, trying to make a better future for the next generation.
Hmm. If people want more information about Science Moms, what should they do?
Well, sciencemoms.com is a website, and it has a lot of information from like facts about climate change in accessible ways to videos linking climate change with issues that people care about, from their kids' health to extreme weather. There are book recommendations for parents. There are book recommendations for kids. So I think that the website is a really sort of one-stop shop for a lot of information that an interested person could find helpful.
Dr. Tracy Holloway is on the faculty at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and part of Science Moms. Professor Holloway, thank you so much for your good work on this important topic, and thank you for being my morning show guest today. Very best wishes to you.
Thank you so much. You too. Bye-bye.
It is 9.